The Honorable Stephen R. Jensen presiding is now in session.
You may be seated. The first case before the court this morning is State of South Dakota versus SB and State of South Dakota versus JE, consolidated cases from Pennington County. Joanna Lawler is here on behalf of the appellants, and Chelsea Wenzel is here on behalf of the state appellees. Each side will have 15 minutes, and then Ms. Lawler, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. When the yellow light comes on, that tells you you have 2 minutes left to complete your argument. So with that, Ms. Lawler, you may proceed with your argument at this time.
Thank you. And may it please the court. Our state's juvenile statutes dictate that a child who drives a vehicle with 0.02% by weight of alcohol in their blood is subject to a child in need of supervision, or CHINS, petition in juvenile court. Nevertheless, in these cases, the state charged SB and JE with driving under the influence in magistrate court, which is a court of limited jurisdiction. Magistrate courts do not have jurisdiction over these children, and the lower courts erred in finding that they do. SDCL 26782 says that the circuit court has original jurisdiction in all CHINS and delinquency proceedings. Therefore, we always start with the assumption that a child who has violated the law will be in juvenile court, unless the legislature has carved out a specific exception. Here, the legislature has limited the magistrate court's jurisdiction over juveniles in SDCL 26111 by stating, in part, that if any child under the age of 18 years is arrested for a violation of any law or municipal ordinance for which the child is not subject to proceedings as a child in need of supervision or a delinquent child, the child shall be brought before the judge of a court having jurisdiction over the offense, and proceedings shall be conducted as though the child were 18 years of age or older. Section 26.8b2 provides that a child who has violated SDCL 322321, that's the zero tolerance DUI as it's often called, is a child in need of supervision. A child would violate that statute if he or she drove a vehicle while having a blood alcohol content of 0.02% or more. There has been no argument during this appeal or in any of the cases below that the children did not meet the definition of CHINS, or child in need of supervision. That makes them subject to the CHINS proceedings. The state concedes this in its briefing by arguing that it has the discretion to charge children under either statute. These simple facts are why appellants argue that the statutes are clear on their face. If these statutes are given their plain meaning and effect, their meaning is unambiguous. The adult DUI statute, SDCL 322331, subsection 1, which is the statute that SB and JE are charged with, is already encompassed in the CHINS DUI statute. It would be factually impossible for a minor child to be in violation of the adult statute 322331, subsection 1, without also being in violation of the zero tolerance or CHINS statute, SDCL 322321.
Counsel, you've made your argument with regard to the language subject to, but then we also have the language in 26111 that refers to a child being arrested or for a violation of. So it seems to me that, you know, your primary argument is kind of trying to unhinge from the actual charge or the offense for which they're arrested. So how do you reconcile that?
That's true. That statute does indicate the language of arrested for, which would actually put the discretion not even with the prosecutors, but with the charging officer who first had contact with the child. And our argument is that that should not be the defining moment when a charging decision is made. And there is language in other sections of the statute that does talk about if a child who is subject to or susceptible to a delinquency petition is accidentally brought in front of a magistrate court, there is a system by which that transfer of power to the appropriate court, the juvenile court would be utilized. Now that section doesn't specifically talk about chins, it only talks about delinquency, but I think it would function in the same way. So even if an arresting officer chooses to cite to the adult DUI statute, once that case is at a point where it's being charged, the child is subject to the chins petition, and I think that's what has to be controlling, is if the child has violated that section and therefore qualifies as a child in need of supervision, I think the statute's limited so that the state's attorney has to charge it that way, or if it doesn't, then the magistrate court has to find that it doesn't have jurisdiction.
But you do agree that once a charge, or there is at least a distinctive point in time as to when the actual charge is determined, as to which court hears the case.
Yes, and I don't think that that should be at the point of arrest, that those decisions should be made. I don't think that a law enforcement officer, though they make split-second decisions all the time, should be expected to sort through the nuances of these statutes. I think by the time it's charged or by the time that child ends up in court, that should be sorted out. And the language is clear that if the child is subject to a chins petition, then we must be in that court of original jurisdiction, which is juvenile court. And the chins petition, which is more specific than that SDCL 26111, the chins petition in 26AB2 provides that any child who has violated that DUI ordinance, the zero tolerance DUI ordinance, is a child in need of supervision. So it doesn't matter what the charge was upon arrest. If they have violated it, meaning if they have driven a car with a 0.02% BAC or higher, then they are necessarily a chins.
A violated text could indicate a findings stage, though, right? So if we have, if we look at some of the verbs that are used in 26111, as we have just a few moments ago, arrested, charged, now violated. Is that a post-findings textual reference? So we don't know if someone's violated something until we know, and until there are findings. So that's a different textual reference. Is that significant?
I think that the statute for the chins petition, which does talk about the violation of the law, is meant to be utilized predisposition. I understand and, of course, wholeheartedly agree that someone, including children, are innocent until proven otherwise. But I believe that this language is meant to indicate that if there is evidence that a child has violated that ordinance, meaning if there's evidence that that child has been drinking and driving such that a petition could be brought, that it should be under that chins statute. And I think that makes more sense than having the law enforcement officer who makes the arrest be the sole interpreter of that.
Does it seem unusual that your argument contemplates foreclosing certain discretionary choices that we would otherwise expect prosecutors to be able to make? Unusual in the sense that you don't see it often. Are there other examples you can think of where the legislature has said to the executive branch, we want you to charge it this way and only this way?
I think that's what most of the criminal code does. The legislature is charged with carving out what a crime is, how those can be charged, what the elements are. So, for example, if a state's attorney decided to charge a 13-year-old with simple assault in magistrate court, arguing they meet all the elements of simple assault, this is where I want to bring it, I don't think any magistrate court in the state would have a problem with saying, no, I don't have jurisdiction over that. This is a juvenile matter. The juvenile court has original jurisdiction. Therefore, I'm not going to hear this misdemeanor simple assault charge because this involves a child, and therefore it should be in juvenile court.
But your agreement contemplates this compulsory prosecutorial discretion before you get to the discretionary component, before you get to the jurisdictional component of your argument. Would you agree with that?
Our argument is that this isn't a matter of prosecutorial discretion.
I understand, but you have to win on that first, right?
I think, if I'm understanding the court's question, that this isn't a matter of prosecutorial discretion, and I think it's clear that the legislature has carved out this exception.
I understand your argument in that regard, but it seems like that's, you have to win that one first before you get to the jurisdictional component. Before you get to the idea that magistrate courts are deprived, there's a restriction on their jurisdiction, you have to cabin the prosecutor's decision as one that only contemplates 32, 23, 21. Does that seem right?
I think so, and that is what the legislature has already done. We may be in agreement.
If you don't win that argument, there may not be any jurisdictional significance.
I'm going to try to answer that. If this court finds that there is ambiguity, that it's not clear that the legislative branch has made it so that children are subject to CHINs petitions and that there is this prosecutorial discretion, then I think we are getting into how some of these laws are ambiguous. If this court doesn't find that language is clear, then I think we are stepping into statutory construction. And if the court believes that there is ambiguity there, then the CHIN statute should be construed liberally in favor of the children. And generally, the more specific statutory language about a particular subject will prevail over the general terms of another statute. This court found that in State v. Smith. SDCL 26-7A-6 is also informative on that point, which says that CHIN's statutes shall be liberally construed for the purposes of affording guidance, control, and rehabilitation of any child in need of supervision or any delinquent child. So if the court does find that there is that ambiguity, that it's not clear on its face that the legislature has carved out this exception and taken CHIN's DUIs away from the magistrate court, then I think we go to trying to interpret the statutory language and to make it so that all of these statutes can exist in harmony. There's also the rule of lenity, which requires ambiguous criminal laws to be interpreted in favor of the accused. I'll also argue that if this court were to accept the state's interpretation, that this is simply a matter of prosecutorial discretion, I think that would lead to absurd and unreasonable results, which I know that this court wants to avoid. And that was noted even in the magistrate court opinion below, the Perry decision. That court puzzled to determine how a child with a 0.02 blood alcohol content is entitled to guidance, control, rehabilitation that the juvenile court offers, but a child with a 0.08 BAC is not, when arguably the child who has been drinking more might need more guidance and rehabilitation. It also leads to the curious example, which happens not infrequently. A child could be charged with stealing a motor vehicle, aggravated eluding from the police, even vehicular homicide, as well as DUI. The more serious charges would be heard in juvenile court. And again, that child would be afforded the guidance and rehabilitative efforts of the juvenile court, whereas the DUI, under the state's interpretation, would be in magistrate court, and the child would be navigating two separate systems with two different sets of penalties and rules for a same course of conduct.
But, you know, in those scenarios, wouldn't it be also within the prosecutorial discretion to reduce a charge and then charge it under the zero tolerance statute and then bring them all together into the juvenile court? It's not like the prosecutor doesn't have the ability or the state to do that.
And that is the state's argument, that they would have that ability to reduce it if they wanted to. In my experience, they don't. And the argument is that it should never get to that point in the first place, that it should originate in juvenile court along with those other charges. It's also notable that if a child were to be convicted of two DUIs in magistrate court as a juvenile and then were to be charged with a third, that third is a felony, as this court recently ruled. It's necessarily a felony, meaning that third DUI for a child under the age of 18 would go to juvenile court. It has to. There's no circuit court jurisdiction for DUIs for juveniles. So again, That's an odd result, given the state's position that if there's some argument that a magistrate court or an adult court is a better forum for DUIs, I don't know how we reconcile that potential outcome. That means that there is a lack of harmony between the statutes, again, if we look at the state's interpretation. And when attempting to construe the intention of the legislature, we are supposed to proceed upon the supposition that the several statutes are governed by one spirit and policy. And as we discussed, the spirit and policy of our legislature towards the juvenile court system has been this one of rehabilitation, not punishment. And we've seen that again and again, and especially with recent reforms. And so in this instance, when the legislature went out of its way to put DUIs in the juvenile statutes under CHINs, I think that was its effort to reconcile all of these and to further its goal of rehabilitating juveniles. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lalo. You may proceed with your argument, Ms. Winslow.
May it please the court.
The first case arose in June of 2018 when law enforcement attempted to initiate a traffic stop with a vehicle that failed to properly stop at a stop sign. The driver, 17-year-old SB, sped up, raced through several parking lots and alleyways, and ran another stop sign before stopping. SB was driving with a revoked license, smelled of alcohol, and had bloodshot eyes. She spoke with slurred speech, swayed during her field sobriety tests, and registered a preliminary breath test, or PBT, of 0.177. Two juveniles and two infants were in the vehicle with SB. Approximately 1 hour after she was pulled over, SB's blood alcohol content, or BAC, was 0.189% by weight of alcohol. The second case arose in January of 2019 when law enforcement initiated a stop with a vehicle who had a headlight out. The driver was 17-year-old J.E. He parked the car and turned off his lights after the officer turned around. When the officer approached, J.E.'s eyes were bloodshot. His performance on the field sobriety tests indicated impairment, and he registered a PBT of 0.088. Approximately 1 hour after being pulled over, J.E. had a BAC of 0.103% by weight of alcohol. In both cases, law enforcement determined that the defendants were too impaired to drive and arrested them for driving under the influence of alcohol pursuant to SDCL 3223-1, which I will refer to as the DUI statute. The defendants were each charged with two misdemeanor counts of DUI under the DUI statute. In their briefs, defendants argued that the statutes at issue were ambiguous because they were open to more than one reasonable interpretation. But their argument is mistakenly based on the assertion that 2611-1 is the statute that gives magistrate courts jurisdiction over misdemeanor offenses committed by juveniles. But SDCL 1612B11 actually gives magistrate courts concurrent jurisdiction to try and determine all cases of misdemeanors. DUI is a class one misdemeanor. It's the state's position that the magistrate court properly exercised jurisdiction over the cases pursuant to 1612B11 and that the appropriate procedure was followed under the clear and unambiguous language of the statutes. As this court has said, the first step in interpreting statutes is to look at the express language. The intent is to be determined from what the legislature said, and we give words plain meaning and effect and read statutes as a whole. And the starting point for the statutory interpretation analysis starts with 2611-1. This is a procedural statute that explains what to do when a juvenile is arrested for a violation of a law or ordinance. As you pointed out, Justice Devaney, this is the important language. This says arrested for a violation, and that is where we start. So if the juvenile is arrested for a violation that does not subject them to a proceeding as a child in need of supervision or a juvenile delinquent, they shall be brought before a court with jurisdiction over the offense. First, looking at the delinquency statutes, DUI carries a criminal penalty of an adult nature, so normally that would fall under juvenile delinquency. However, it's also a traffic offense, which the legislature has categorically excepted from the delinquency statutes. So DUI is not subject to that statute.
All right. 3212.49.1, Ms. Wenzel provides, it's the point system, and it references driving while intoxicated. Has the legislature or this court had occasion to determine whether a 3223-21 is a traffic offense?
I do not believe they have. It is under the same title, 32, and so I think arguably it could be, but I don't believe this court has had the occasion to decide.
Thank you.
So next, we look at the Chin statute, and only two subsections of the Chin statute deal with violations. First is subsection 4, and that includes violations for which there is not a penalty of a criminal nature for an adult. So the DUI statute does not fall under that. Subsection 5 specifically enumerates two statutes that are status offenses. DUI statute is not one of those statutes listed, nor is it a status offense like the other two. Therefore, DUI is not subject to a Chin's proceeding. And because DUI is not subject to juvenile delinquency or Chin's, according to the plain language of 2611.1, the defendants were properly brought before the magistrate court, which had jurisdiction over their misdemeanor offenses. It's the state's position that the court need not look further than the plain language to interpret the statutes. However, there are some other statutes and considerations that do support the state's reading. The first of which is prosecutorial discretion. The facts of these cases would fit with more than one potential charge. But it is well settled. Unless otherwise constrained by the legislature or the Constitution, prosecutors have broad discretion to choose which charges to bring. Under 3223.1.3, the legislature has affirmatively given prosecutors the discretion and the direction with how to charge certain DUIs. Subsection 1.3 says, any person arrested for driving with 0.08% or more by weight of alcohol in their system is to be charged with a DUI under the DUI statute. Then the prosecutor may reduce or dismiss that charge. Justice Salter, one of your questions was, has the legislature limited prosecutorial discretion in other contexts? And they have. The legislature knows how to limit prosecutorial discretion. In 2242.5, the legislature limited prosecution of controlled substance violations in the bloodstream. In 2223.1, the legislature limited prosecution of prostitution violations to people over 18. Notably, they also specifically included a description of prostitution in the Chin statute. They did not refer to it as a violation because it no longer is a violation for someone who is under 18.
So the 2242.5 statute was the one that I had in mind. And it says, as you know, thank you for bringing it up. It says, as you know, that for a possession of controlled substance violation under the theory that the substance has been absorbed into the system, shall only be charged under the provisions of SDCL 2242.5.1, shall only be charged under the provisions. Your argument is that legislature, as you say, knows how to do this. This is how they do it. This is the textual reference when they direct prosecutors. Yes?
Yes. And there's no similar language as the language you just pointed out, Justice Salter, or language specifically referencing alcohol violations committed in vehicles under the Chin statute. If the legislature wanted to so limit prosecutorial discretion, they would have. DUI and a zero tolerance violation are two distinct crimes. DUI is a class one misdemeanor, and it prohibits driving while impaired by certain substances, regardless of the age, or whether the substances can be legally consumed by that person. Zero tolerance is a class two misdemeanor, and it prohibits people that are under the age of 21 from driving with substances that are illegal for that person in their system, regardless of impairment. The zero tolerance statute does not talk about impairment. Zero tolerance, like the Chin statute, prohibits certain conduct because of age. Now, DUI is a generally applicable statute that targets impaired drivers. If the line between these two violations is to be blurred, that's a prerogative of the legislature.
Counsel, in your view, could a 15-year-old with a .03 a blood alcohol or level in their breath be charged in magistrate court, or only as a CHINS?
I believe in that factual scenario, they could they would probably only be able to be charged under the CHINS statute and then brought to circuit court.
So it'd be a zero tolerance charge of a 15-year-old with a .02. Would they go to mag court, or would they have to be charged as a CHINS?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
So under 3223.21, the zero tolerance statute. What does the statutory scheme suggest for somebody who's 15 years old and has a .02 BAC and they're caught driving? Can they be charged only as a CHINS or also in mag court?
I believe if they are charged under the zero tolerance statute, that would have to go under a CHINS petition, and then they would go before the circuit court.
Thank you.
It's the state's position that reading the CHINS statute to include only those violations based on blood alcohol content, as the defendants are asking this court to do, would lead to the inconsistent treatment of juveniles. As this court has said, courts do not read statutes in a manner beyond what the legislature has expressed, especially when it leads to disparate or absurd results. Defendant's argument ignores the violations under the DUI statute that are not prohibited by zero tolerance. Subsections 3 and 5 of the DUI statute prohibit driving under the influence of legal substances. That's inhalants, Robitussin, a valid prescription. This conduct is not prohibited under the zero tolerance statute. So while one juvenile, like SB, is charged with zero tolerance regardless of how high her blood alcohol content is, another would be charged with DUI if they were driving under the influence of a valid prescription or Robitussin.
Could a child in that circumstance be charged as a CHINS 26.8b2 under subparent 3 for a violation by a child whose behavior or condition endangers the child's own welfare or the welfare of others? Could they be chargeable that way?
No. I think reading that subsection 3 in such a broad way would ignore the language of 26.11.1 that specifically says violations. And if we read subsection 3 in such a broad way, there would have been no need for the legislature to add specific violations or separate the delinquency in CHIN statutes. You know, if all conduct could fall under subsection 3, then the legislature just could have said that. You know, anything, they could have left subsection 3 the way it was. And that's an unworkable standard, because at that point, how would you ever determine where a child should be charged or where a juvenile should be charged or what violations fall under? And the CHIN statute stands for Child in Need of Supervision. And I think that's important to keep in mind as well. You don't have to be arrested for conduct that is harmful or dangerous to you or the welfare of others. That is meant for other types of conduct. And that's how a child or a juvenile would be brought into CHINS court on a petition of that nature.
Thank you.
So it's the state's position that reading the statute to include the CHIN statute to include some types of DUI, but not others, is certainly more absurd of a result than reading the CHIN statute to include only those violations specifically enumerated by the legislature. And the state's position conforms to the plain language of the statutes, would have consistent application with juveniles, and leaves questions of policy for the legislature.
It's kind of a fine point, and maybe it may not matter. But if you win on your textual argument, which in your view vests prosecutors with discretion, just as you say by reading the text, and that's your argument. If you win on that, it seems like we wouldn't get to the question Ms. Lawler poses, which is a restriction that she identifies for magistrate courts. And if we don't get to that, we've got three guilty pleas. So how's this case end?
Well,
under your scenario.
So under our scenario, the convictions are affirmed, of course. You know, it is the state's position that this is not a jurisdictional issue. This is prosecutorial discretion. This is procedural. But the state did not assert that because we think this is a matter of public importance, and we would like the court to rule on this issue. But if it isn't a jurisdictional question, then defendants would have waived any non-jurisdictional issue that would have happened in the proceedings before.
Thank you. Thank you. 5 minutes for rebuttal, Ms. Lowe.
Ms. Lawler, can I ask you a question? I wasn't holding out on you. I was going to talk with you about the 2242-5 text. You just were running low on time in your first time. So if you want to respond to that, that'd be grateful. And the question sort of is along the lines of, hey, the legislature seems to know how to direct prosecutors to charge a particular way. And I would say, you know, the limited number of times when they've done it. Your argument, I understand, is inferential, but it doesn't seem to be the same sort of direct text that we would see in some of those other statutes. And I'm curious about your thoughts.
I would agree with the court that the legislature could have made our job today a little bit easier. And I think it's notable that the statute that Your Honor was discussing with the state earlier, I believe was put into the Chin statute very recently in the last couple of legislative sessions. And so perhaps they are improving on that. However, I do think that the language that the legislature has given us is sufficient for us to determine that a child who is driving with a 0.02% by weight of blood or over is subject to only the Chin's petition and the Chin statute. So, again, I think my argument still stands that if this court finds that the language that the legislature used is not as clear as it could be and that there is that ambiguity, then we do go to that statutory interpretation where we are looking at statutes with the best interest of the child in mind and with always with an eye towards rehabilitation. And what the state doesn't argue in its briefing or an oral argument today is that the magistrate court is somehow a better forum for juveniles. I think we all agree that the juvenile court does offer more rehabilitation and guidance for children.
Can I get your argument in that regard, Ms. Lawler? But you argued that that sort of made the statute or the reading the statute the way the state suggests to be absurd. Isn't it really more of a public policy issue in terms of this is a better way to do it in your estimation rather than it's absurd? And if so, isn't that really an argument you make to the legislature and not to this court?
I do agree that it is a better way to do things, and that is my belief. However, I don't think that it's merely a public policy argument because of the mandate that this court has to view all statutes as part of a harmonious scheme. And it really is absurd that a child can be charged with different offenses in two different courts out of the same course of conduct, as I indicated earlier. That an aggravated eluding charge is under the protection of the juvenile court, but the first offense, DUI, is not. Similarly, we talked a bit about the facts of the case. The state did. This is her second DUI conviction. It could be that a juvenile one day will come up with a third. And We're all of a sudden saying, we told you earlier that it's serious, so it has to be an adult court, but now that you've gotten a third one, it's really, really serious, so now we put you in juvenile court. It does defy logic, the state's interpretation. And so it's not just a policy argument, I would assert. I think it is part of the legislative effort, especially within the last decade or so, of treating children differently and getting to the root of the problem of not just having that kid pay a fine because they drove drunk, but putting them on probation, allowing them to have the services that juvenile court would offer.
But these statutes, the zero tolerance was enacted in 98, and then the reference inserted in the CHINs and delinquency definitions in 04, and the recent statutory amendments you're talking about, you know, 2018, I mean, they didn't go, the legislature, even in light of these policy changes, hasn't gone back and looked at these statutes or modified them, have they?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. And again, perhaps they could have been clearer when they moved the zero tolerance DUI statute into CHINs in the early aughts. I agree with that. But I also agree with the court that if there was something missed and there is a child with a DUI that doesn't fall under the current CHINs provision, that could be covered under that subsection 3, which would be a child doing something that would be endangering to the public. Thank you.
Thank you. That completes the arguments in the first case, and the case is now submitted. We have another case with similar issue that we're going to take up immediately rather than taking a break, and that's State of South Dakota versus ZO. Mr. Davis, you can get set up. We'll give you a minute to do that, and then we'll move forward with that case.
I'm ready when you are.
Okay, so this is State of South Dakota versus CO. Eric Davis appears on behalf of the appellant, and Chelsea Wenzel on behalf of the state, appellee. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your initial argument, and then Mr. Davis, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. The yellow light will come on at 2 minutes. You may proceed at this time, Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Chief Justice Jensen. May it please the court, Ms. Wenzel, Ms. Lawler. It turns out it is not particularly easy to prepare an oral argument when you know that you are going to be coming up immediately after two excellent attorneys in the court have already discussed the issue, raising essentially the same issues of law. And so, of course, much of what I intend to argue today has been informed by the last 35 minutes. And I think the arguments and authorities cited by my colleagues in the Pennington County Public Defender's Office are correct. But respectfully, I do not think the court needs to go as far as it is being invited to go in this case, because I do not think these cases have anything to do with prosecutorial discretion. I think they can be resolved using the most fundamental and basic canons of statutory construction. In my first job as a brand new associate fresh out of law school, I worked for a seasoned trial attorney, and I would often go to him knowing very little about how to practice law, as young associates do, and I would ask questions like, how, for example, would a person open a guardianship proceeding? And he would say, why are you asking me? Go to the red books. You know, this whole business is governed by rules. Everyone's nice enough to write them down. Go read the rules, go read the guardianship chapter, figure it out, and then come to me if you have specific questions. And that was pretty good advice, and it served me well throughout my entire career, even though I would often go to the firm's law library and mutter that I was just looking for a form, and by the way, we don't have any red books. Turns out they changed the color sometime probably before I was born, but I figured that out, and I learned to go to the code books as my primary source of material. And I looked in your beautiful law library today. You still have the red books, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that That advice has served me very well in the past years of my practice. And unlike Ms. Lawler and Mr. Olson in the Pennington County Public Defender's Office, who I understand practice almost exclusively in the area of juvenile law, I confess this is the first juvenile case I have ever touched in my legal career. And so I fell back on that old advice to look at the statutes. And the statutes, as we've already discussed today, make it clear the legislature has defined a child in need of supervision as any child who has violated SDCL 35-23-21. And when we look at that statute, the legislature says one violates that statute by being under the age of 21 and driving with a BAC of 0.02% or more. Well, that's my client. The state says that my client operated a motor vehicle with a BAC of 0.02 or more. Therefore, he is a child in need of supervision. And the state's argument is essentially, yes, he is statutorily defined as a child in need of supervision, but only if the prosecutor agrees with that assessment. And if the prosecutor does not agree with that assessment for whatever reason, then my client is not entitled to the guidance and benefit and control offered by the CHINS program and is instead going to be punished as if he were a 50-year-old man instead of the 16-year-old child that he is. And I do not believe that result is in harmony with the CHINS statutes. Ms. Lawler, in her arguments and her briefing, will explain that that was not the legislature's intent, that that's not particularly good policy, that that's not helpful to children, that children are better served in CHINS court. And the state would argue the contrary. I guess I'm not taking a position on that as to which is correct. And I don't think the court should either, because I don't think the court has to. Because one thing we know for certain is that jurisdictional questions and the questions of what conduct violates the law are within the sole purview of the legislature. And the legislature has spoken in this case. And I do not believe that there is any ambiguity in the statute that says that a child, that someone violates the zero tolerance statutes by being under the age of 21 and driving a motor vehicle with a BAC of 0.02 or more. If the state, it seems to me, wants to justify reaching the exact opposite conclusion of that which is unambiguously commanded by the statute, it is going to need to bring something more to the table than references to the common law doctrine of prosecutorial discretion, or some older statutes enacted far before this recent and comprehensive revision of the juvenile justice system and the CHINS program, which are being amended just within the last few years. The statute that Ms. Wenzel referred to that talks about the state shall charge a person with operating a motor vehicle with 0.08 or more with a DUI is a much older statute, almost 15 years older. And to bring that statute into play, or some of the other statutes into play that the state has briefed, essentially elevates general statutes above more specific statutes. It elevates previously enacted statutes over more relevant statutes, and that violates two of the fundamental canons of statutory construction. And that assumes that we have an ambiguous statute, which I don't think we have.
So, Mr. Davis, if I understand your argument, if you have a 16-year-old who is under the influence of a prescription drug driving, prosecution could still file under the DUI statute because it doesn't fall under the zero tolerance law.
I believe that is correct, yes. Based on a strict reading of the statute, I believe that is correct. I'm not saying that's good policy. I'm not saying that's bad policy. I'm saying it is the textual reading of that statute.
So if you have the same 16-year-old who instead is, say, at a 0.25 blood level alcohol, the state would have to file under the CHINS statute because that's the crime that offense that the child has committed.
That is what, in my view, the statute says. If a person under the age of 21 is driving with a BAC of 0.02 or more, must be charged as a CHIN. It's a jurisdictional issue.
And once they get over 0.8, the state still doesn't have discretion to charge under the DUI statute.
I do not believe so. I don't think there's any room for discretion in this statutory language. And I think it makes sense. I don't think it's an absurd result at all that the legislature would want to treat alcohol different than other issues. And that even high BAC, as Ms. Lawler said, a child with a 0.07 BAC, the legislature says needs guidance, control, and supervision. A child with a 0.09 BAC might need slightly more guidance, control, and supervision. What they don't need is to be treated as if they were an adult. Again, I'm getting into the policy issues, but it is only to point out that I do not think the result is absurd at all to suggest that we want to intervene in these children's lives and try to correct a course of conduct before it gets out of hand, while these children are still subject to the guidance, control, and supervision of the CHINS program that the legislature has fashioned exactly for these kinds of kids.
So under the standard 08 DUI statute, it says any person, which was clearly in place at the time that they changed the CHIN statute. Legislature clearly must have envisioned some operation of that statute. How do you get away, how do you disregard the any person language?
Well, I think the any person language, again, I have it here. I can tell you the most recent time that it was enacted. It was 2002 was the last time that statute was changed, at least according to my research. Enacted in 1983, changed in 2002. I think the legislature often, you know, despite the hard work and best efforts of the Legislative Research Council, we know that there are statutes that apply to various issues littered throughout the code. They're not all conveniently placed in the same chapter, in the same book, and others might touch on others, and sometimes some might get missed. But the only way to, if the state's argument is correct, that this statute controls, that any person charged with that, it just completely negates the more recently enacted CHIN statute that clearly says that children with 0.02 or more belong in CHINS court.
Is that recently enacted, counsel? If we're talking about 32-23-21, I understand that to be enacted in 98.
It was enacted in 98. My notes, just from the print-off, such as I understand the session laws at the bottom, say that it's been amended numerous times in 99, in 03, in 04, in 06, and in 2019. I do not know that the legislature tinkered with all of that language, but they certainly tinkered with the statute. If it was their intention to make a wholesale revision, I think it would be clear from the language. It's not clear from the language. To me, the necessary result, if the state is correct, and a prosecutor has the discretion to charge some kids as CHINs and other kids as adults, then it also has the discretion to charge no kids as CHINs. It could say, you know what, we're done with this CHINs stuff. We're just going to charge every child with an adult DUI. It renders the statute completely meaningless. And the legislature has told us that it would like this court to construe these statutes to liberally to provide for the guidance, control, and rehabilitation of children. And a DUI first in magistrate court does not provide for the guidance, control, and rehabilitation of children. It's a punishment.
So, counsel, you know, there's been a lot of changes in the juvenile system over the recent years. There's also the juvenile citation process, for example, dealing with certain status offenses. It seems like there is more than maybe just this contrast between dealing with the CHINs in magistrate court. So, you know, couldn't there also be, is it so absurd that we would have different types of ways of dealing with both misdemeanor conduct and felony conduct? So we have certain felony conduct that's carved out for juveniles that goes to adult court. Why is it so absurd that a certain level of misdemeanors when we're dealing with something like driving under the influence that has so much, unlike some other status offenses like you know, truancy or just alcohol consumption, where you have a real impact on the public when you have juveniles driving with alcohol in their system. So why is it so absurd, or why would it not make sense that maybe some of the misdemeanor category could not also be meant to be handled in another fashion?
I've already confessed this is my first juvenile case. I'm not an expert in juvenile law, as Ms. Lawler is. And I would defer a question like that to her. I think the question of To me, it seems the argument is going more into, I think we need to focus on the textual reading. That is really the extent of my argument in this case. I am not advancing the same arguments that the Pennington County Public Defender's Office is in the companion cases. And so, Justice Devaney, I don't have a great answer for that question. I'm saying that if you read the statute in the way that it is written, it is clear, it's unambiguous, and it makes sense. Are there ways to do things different? Yes. I'm not suggesting that the state's that what the state is proposing is absurd. I'm just saying it's not supported by a plain text reading of the statute. There are numerous ways to do it, but until we have an ambiguity, I don't think the court should engage in construing an unambiguous statute to reach a different result. The
lack of ambiguity, if I could interrupt, Mr. Davis.
Of course.
So I understand your argument to place a premium on the text, and I can understand that. The text, however, as you know, cites one statute that's relevant here, 3223.21. Would you agree at a minimum that just as a textual matter and as a matter of essential elements, 3223.21 is not 3223.1?
Yes, I do agree that 21, that the statutes are not the same.
And here's so a textual reference to 3223.21 may be read as a textual reference to that statute. How is it that, in your view, the plain text compels a different result and a different reading? The plain text does not say 3223.1, self-evident fact. Well, if we can agree that those are different statutes and those are different offenses, in fact, how is it that the reference textually, which is the extent of your argument, to 3223.21 is in fact a reference to 3223.1?
Well, I think it gets to the question, Justice Salter, of the, and it goes back to Justice Devaney's argument of the question of whether, you know, we've got these multiple terms here. We've got arrested for, a child who has violated, a child who has charged with. I think.
Do any of those really matter?
I don't think they matter because I think the distinction and the court, there was a question about, I don't think they matter because to accept that argument is to nullify the plain text of the statute. It is, to me, the distinction is it's a jurisdictional question. It is not the issue of, I'm out of time.
Thank you.
I'll address it when I come back up. Thank you.
You may proceed, Ms. Wenzel.
May it please the court again and counsel. In November of 2019, law enforcement initiated a stop with a vehicle driving over the speed limit on the interstate. The driver of the vehicle was 16-year-old Zio, and he had bloodshot eyes and smelled of alcohol. His performance on the field sobriety test indicated impairment, and his PBT registered at 0.161. The officer determined that Zio was too impaired to drive, and it arrested him for DUI, just as in the previous cases. Almost 2 hours after being pulled over, he had a BAC of 0.129% by weight of alcohol. Again, like the others, he was charged with two counts of DUI under the DUI statute. Now, the state would rely on the plain language and supporting arguments made in the previous argument. But I wanted to point out some other things additionally. First of all, counsel talks about canons of construction, right? And how these canons of construction have led him to determine that the statute is unambiguous. However, that's not how this court does statutory interpretation. That's not how statutory interpretation is done. First, you start with the plain language. If the plain language is unambiguous, you don't go to statutory construction or canons. And that's the state's position.
that when you read through the statutes, when you read through 26111, when you get to juvenile delinquency and chins, that's where this court can stop, according to the plain language. You know, I learned early in my legal career, not so much in law school, but in my legal career, that it is helpful to go to the statute books, to the actual books, and read through the chapter if you're trying to understand how to interpret a specific statute. And this court has said it is inappropriate to select one statute on a topic and disregard another that may modify or limit the effective scope. And this is still in statutory interpretation. This is still in plain language. So if the court would want to move past the chin statute 26111, if you move into Title 32, that's where the DUI statute is. That's where zero tolerance is, and that's where 1.3 is located. And when those statutes are all read together, the legislature clearly limited the reach, I guess, of zero tolerance. Zero tolerance does begin at 0.02, but it does end at 0.08. Now the prosecutor has discretion to drop that charge or to lower it or dismiss it, but that is what the legislature has said. That is the clear and unambiguous text of the legislature. And this court presumes that the legislature is aware of any previous enactments. So the fact that one might be before the other doesn't change this analysis. Another point I would like to make is that prosecutorial discretion really is the prosecutor exercising the executive authority. It's not just a common law concept. This comes from the executive authority in the state and federal constitutions. And finally, I know defendant has talked about, you know, he's not making a policy argument. This is the clear, unambiguous language. And the state recognizes that juveniles are treated differently in some contexts. But the legislature specifically accepted DUI and other violations from the statute. As you pointed out, Justice Devaney, it isn't that every time a juvenile is arrested or violates some law that they go either to juvenile court or chins. There are specific exceptions. Sometimes they do go to adult court. Sometimes, for instance, in 26111, it refers to a tobacco violation. And if they are arrested for that, they go straight to a court with jurisdiction over that offense, which would be magistrate or circuit court. And the legislature has a strong interest in protecting the public from impaired drivers. And that's the difference. When you look at the chin statute, these are status offenses. Truancy, running away from home. In subsection 5, it's 35-9-5. That's minor consumption or possession of alcohol. That is a status offense. So I understand that there might be competing policies, but reconciling those competing policies is for the legislature. This court has said that courts read statutes for their plain meaning and effect, and they don't insert words into statutes that don't exist. And this is especially true when the legislature has not clearly extended its juvenile policies that far. If the court has no further questions, again, I would rely on the arguments made in my previous argument, but I would ask this court to affirm the convictions, and if it's still okay, I will stop early.
Thank you, Ms. Wenzel. Rebuttal, Mr. Davis.
Thank you. I'll just pick up where we left off, Justice Salter. I think the difference is, that we're talking about here in the question of prosecutorial discretion is the question was raised of whether the legislature has limited prosecutorial discretion in ways like this before. My research indicates that, I'll go back. To me, the distinction in this case We're not talking about whether the prosecutors have discretion to charge an adult, for example, with first-degree murder instead of second-degree murder. That's the concept of prosecutorial discretion that we're usually familiar with. I think the reason this case is unique is we are not talking about that kind of prosecutorial discretion. We're talking about a jurisdictional issue. And that's why I think this case has nothing to do with prosecutorial discretion, is the Chin statute is a jurisdictional question. And so I am not familiar with, and I admit that my research is not exhaustive, but I'm not familiar with another area of the law where a law enforcement officer or a prosecutor has the discretion to choose which court to proceed in. That is the exclusive prerogative of the legislature, and that's how I think this case is different, and that's what I think the Chin statute does. So we're taking an unambiguous statute, and I don't think Ms. Wenzel's argument is correct, respectfully. I think what she is trying to do is harmonize multiple statutes to reach the result that the state wants to reach in this case. But the jurisdictional statute that says a child who has violated the zero tolerance statute is a child in need of supervision is jurisdictional, not a charging question. And it's my intent that that answers your question, Justice Salter. It may not. If it doesn't, I'm sure you'll clear it up for me.
Thank you very much.
Just addressing some of the other issues, going back to the question of the statutory text that discusses the child being arrested for a violation of law, that seems to give the law enforcement officer's discretion, and the statute does not provide for anyone to have discretion, whether it's violated or charged with. That is not the ultimate inquiry. The ultimate inquiry is, again, the statutory text that sets the jurisdiction of children in having a blood alcohol content of 0.02 or higher in magistrate court. I do not think that the language allows for any discretion to reach the opposite result, and I think it would take a more on-point statute in order to do that. That is really the extent of my argument in this case, and I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Case is now submitted. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.